this is Lucy Sanders. I'm the CEO of the National Center for Women and Information Technology, and this interview is one in a series of interviews that we're doing with fabulous IT entrepreneurs. With me today are Larry Nelson and Lee Kennedy. Larry is CEO of W3W3.com, and Lee is an Intuit director. Welcome, Larry and Lee.
Well, thank you. It's so great being able to get together and help support this type of thing. The Heroes Program, sponsored by NCWIT, is wonderful. And at W3W3.com, where we archive everything and we push it out and we have a large audience, we're happy to be a part of this.
Thanks, Lucy. I'm excited to be here and be part of the interview series.
Well, and today we're interviewing Kim Pellese. We're so excited, Kim, to have you on the call.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
I have to say that your career has been one that I think is just awesome. When I look back at some of the things you've been involved with, for example, Java, I remember when Sun released Java. You know, us techies at Bell Labs were pretty excited about that because it really enabled the internet to come alive. You know, you could bring applications along with the static web pages, and that was just tremendously thrilling. And then when you moved over into Marimba, working on push technology, again, we were all rather thrilled that we could have stuff come to our desktop without even asking for it. That's pretty amazing. And now you have a new company, Spike Sources, a couple years old, is that right?
Yes, actually it was founded in 2003, and I joined. It was an incubation project at Kleiner Perkins, a venture firm here in Silicon Valley. I joined in the fall of 2004.
Ooh.
Well, and I just think you've been on the leading edge of all of these different trends in software and software development. And why don't you give the listeners a little bit of information about Spike Source?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So Spike Source is basically, its mission is to, sort of in a nutshell, democratize software and do that by bringing open source software to a mass market. When I say democratize software, I mean make software as low cost and easy to maintain and use as possible. You know, software is a wonderful thing. It powers all sorts of services and appliances and, you know, the world around us every day. But it's also really complicated both to develop, package, you know, and maintain and support. And open source has provided a wonderful new abundance, new ecosystem of software applications and components and infrastructure. And it's really totally changing the software industry in a variety of ways and really accelerating innovation because software is getting better faster. There's many more people who are banging on it and making it better every day. And that's a wonderful thing. It's a very exciting time to be in the software world. But there's also a challenge with abundance. And businesses that have been using open source find that very quickly they get into a lot of overhead, time and cost in maintaining open source applications because the application typically consists of dozens or hundreds of different open source components, all of which need to be updated, maintained, and made to work together, continually integrated and tested. And that's a huge problem. So what Spike Source is doing is really solving that problem through automation. We're automating specifically the process of maintaining that software and ensuring that those software applications continue to work, stay up and running, and, you know, are free of viruses and so forth, and really making the process of maintaining open source software invisible to the user. We're using very interesting approaches in computer science in automating the build, test, patch process and creating an automated test framework for basically packaging up and distributing and supporting and maintaining these open source applications. And we're bringing to market a variety of open source applications, basically taking many of the best applications out there on the internet in email and content management and business intelligence and CRM and so forth, and offering those as packaged applications to businesses of all sizes, and then a low-cost subscription maintenance stream along with it. So in this way, when I said democratizing software, again, it's really about making software much easier to buy and to use and to have supported in much lower cost. That's now all possible because of open source and because of the new technologies that we're working on and others are participating in as well, in innovating and automating and maintaining this software.
Well, and I think that the technologies involved with software engineering are some of the most complex. There's no question. And so I can only imagine that the technologies you're using at Spike Source are pretty advanced.
Yes.
For sure. And that gets me maybe to the first question that we wanted to ask you. In addition to some of the technologies that you're using today at Spike Source, what other technologies do you see on the horizon that you find particularly cool?
Well, the open source world is really where most of the most interesting innovation is happening, in my view, in software today. And that's because of the power of collaboration. And you take, for example, virtualization software, a huge amount of innovation happening there. And you see a lot of not only developers all over the world who are contributing to open source virtualization technologies, but also big companies that are standardizing on open source and using it to drive greater value in their hardware platforms. So to me, in general, the most exciting place to be in software today is in the open source world. And in virtually every category, there's a tremendous innovation happening and really a new generation of software being developed. And there are a lot of very important supporting technologies and underlying infrastructure that's also helping make this happen. A lot of the service-oriented architecture, the web services, the easy-to-use now APIs that make it possible to put pieces of software together more easily. And new techniques like agile programming and so forth to make it easier to build software faster. But so much of that really does, again, come out of the open source world. And we're finding that the open source model of building software is becoming more prevalent even within companies and across companies in vertical industries such as financial services and retail. Many companies now beginning to collaborate on creating applications that they can share to make their respective businesses more efficient.
Well, and in fact, I'm on a commission looking at the R&D ecosystem for IT, and we were at Harvard. We listened to a researcher not too long ago who was studying open source and the movement of companies into open source, and it was pretty interesting how that platform is really emerging. How did you first get into technology, Kim?
I was actually a girl geek. I grew up in Berkeley, California, and I was fortunate to really be exposed to science at a very early age. I started entering science fairs as a kid in elementary school and just found that I loved the idea of creating something new and exploring and testing the limits of what was possible. And then I found a place called the Lawrence Hall of Science, which is a public science museum here in the Bay Area, and went up there as, again, a kid in elementary school, started playing on the computers. And there was a program called ELIZA, which was one of the early artificial intelligence software applications that was running on the computers there. It was kind of an online psychotherapist. And I really loved playing on the computer that ran ELIZA and trying to get ELIZA to kind of go into an infinite loop or act like a computer and sort of, again, see the limits of what was possible. So all of that sparked my curiosity, my interest in not only science, but specifically computers and software. And ultimately ended up getting a degree in biophysics, but more and more at Berkeley started to get more and more involved in computer programming and software development as an undergrad. And that increasingly became where my interests were directed.
That's really cool. So Kim, tell us why you're an entrepreneur and what it is about entrepreneurship that really makes you tick.
Well, I've always loved creating new things. I love inventing, coming up with a new idea, running with it, and seeing what's possible. And there's nothing more exciting than setting out with a small team of people on a mission to, climb a mountain and then actually doing it together, making it happen. So I think it's the creativity, it's the element of being able to chart your own course, come up with a new idea, the challenge of making that idea actually into a successful business, which is, two very distinct elements to building a successful company in the technology area. One is coming up with a great technology, but the other is actually making it work in the economic sense, in the sense of the market acceptance. And that turns out to be a whole separate creative process. And all of that is very challenging. I love a challenge. I love climbing mountains and, scaling new heights, because it's just fun when you get there, and it's fun along the way. So I found that was just something I gravitated towards, and I think it's just something that's been inside me forever.
And it's a pretty good view when you get to the top.
Boy, I'll say. Say, Kim, I can't help but reflect back. Quite some time ago, did I hear that you were one of those early radicals that were pushing free open source software?
Well, I did grow up in Berkeley, it's true, and I was hanging out at Cal when Bill Joy was a grad student, and so I do have it in my, probably in my DNA by now.
I see.
But I didn't actually get to immerse myself in open source until I joined SpikeSource in 2004 and really started doing it as a full-time and wrapping my head around the whole open source world and building a business.
You've done a wonderful job. Now, along the line, I'm sure, now you mentioned Bill Joy. We interviewed him probably 5, 6, 7 years ago now. But along the line, did you have any particular mentor or support person or support group that really helped you along the way?
Well, I was very fortunate to work at a great company for 7 years, Sun Microsystems, and Sun was full of very bright, very, demanding people, where there was a bar that was set high and you had to achieve more than you thought you were capable of. And I look at the management team, you know, the founders of Sun, Scott McNeely and Bill Joy, Vinod Khosla, and Andy Bechtolsheim, and they really were great inspiration to me, each of them. And also, to me, at that time in the 80s, as I was developing my career, Carol Bartz, who's a senior executive at Sun at the time, I really looked up to her. Sandy Kurtzig, Heidi Roizen, these were women who were really leading the way in building companies and proving that women could achieve great things in technology and in software. So I was surrounded by, I guess, many inspirational leaders, and I learned what I could from each of them and then really kind of molded that into what I decided to do next and, you know, how I developed my career.
Wow. Kim, you've been in the thick of Silicon Valley and all the changes that have taken place over the last 10, 20 years, and you've had such an exciting career. When you look back, what's the toughest thing that you've had to do in your career?
Well, there are many challenges in building a company. I'd say probably the toughest thing as a manager is letting someone go, is actually, you know, making decision that you know is right for the company and right for ultimately that individual as well, but always a tough thing to do. So I'd say that probably is at the top of the list, and that's just one of those management challenges that everyone has to deal with at a certain point. So that's on the not-so-fun part. There are also, you know, challenges just inherently in building a business. And I'd say the other thing that I have faced repeatedly, but it actually is also kind of a fun challenge, is the need to adapt to change. And, you know, when you're starting a company and you're in a new market, you've got a new idea, and it's unproven, there's no precedent, you can't become attached to that one plan that you think you're going to execute on, because there's always going to be a reason why it doesn't exactly turn out that way, and there's another twist in the path and another unexpected obstacle, but then unexpected opportunity at the same time. And so adapting to change and being comfortable with change on a daily basis is something that can be real tough at first, but then once you get used to it, it's actually exhilarating because you love the challenge of being able to rise to the occasion and, you know, adjust course, change course as needed, and still keep your eye on the ultimate goal that you're headed toward. It's just the path along the way is different than you thought it would be. That's, I'd say, a more fun, tough thing that I've faced in business.
Well, and in fact, you ultimately get to the place where you really enjoy change.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to be working on something where that wasn't part of what you did every day.
That's right.
It really becomes part of the challenge. And I think that's wonderful advice. You can share with us a bit more advice that you might give to young people about entrepreneurship if they were sitting in the room with you right now.
Sure. Well, there's a lot to say, and if I were to boil it down, some of the things that come to mind first, it really has to do with what I was just talking about. You might have a great idea, but you can't forget the market that you're launching it into and all of the other constituents, you know, that need to contribute to the success of what you're setting out to do. So, for example, you may be launching a product in the market that's the most brilliant product that anyone's developed or thought of, but it turns out that it's just too early. A good example of this is I worked in artificial intelligence, AI, software back in the 80s. And we had built a fantastic software system that was an expert system, but the hardware requirements were prohibitive in terms of cost and just the overall expense of delivering an expert system. You'd have $50,000 plus computers required. Ultimately, there wasn't a mass market for that back in the 80s. The software wasn't ready for the environment around it that it needed to rely on. And so for entrepreneurs, I'd say don't get too enamored of your idea. Make sure that you see the full picture and that you find a way to make it palatable in the market today and then chart a path to where you ultimately believe you can go and what the ultimate end goal is. But don't be too wrapped up with getting to the end goal right off the bat. So that's one thing. The other thing I'd say is get comfortable with saying no. Because as an entrepreneur, you want to say yes to every possibility and every potential customer and partner that comes along. And there's a temptation to do that, especially early on. And you have to have the discipline to say, you know what, we'd love to deliver this product into both the enterprise market and the consumer market. And we know the software is capable of working in, you know, for both markets, but we're just going to focus on the enterprise market because that's where, you know, that's the first step. And then from there, we can build a bigger company and ultimately get to the broader market. But saying no, and we had to do this at Marimba, the decision we made very early on was to focus on the enterprise and not the consumer market. It turned out to be the best decision we made, but it was a very tough one at the time because I knew we could do anything, you know? We could absolutely serve a broader market, but you have to have the discipline to know what you're capable of and take one step at a time.
That's some very sage advice. So what personal characteristics do you think have given you advantages as an entrepreneur?
Probably the greatest one is persistence. It's never losing sight of that goal that you're charging towards, and never losing faith that you will achieve that goal, and being totally flexible and able to deal with any obstacle that comes along, whether it's an obstacle in the market, you know, a challenge with the team, whatever it happens to be, never giving up. Never, ever, ever, ever giving up. If you have that, you'll find a way. You'll find a way to get to where you're going, no matter what. And I think that's probably, for every successful entrepreneur, you'll find that that is the primary characteristic that made them.
In fact, we're finding that with this series of interviews, and I believe that one of the people we interviewed a few weeks ago said, there's this line between persistence and pesty, and it's okay to cross over it from time to time.
Yeah, that'll be true.
Yeah, well, I want to switch a minute into this issue of balance. You know, there's a lot written about work and personal balance. And so we just wanted to ask, you know, how do you bring balance into your life?
Well, that's a great question. And one thing I've always made sure to do is to continue to pursue the things I love to do in the rest of my life. You know, one thing I love is dance. I've always done that, and I still do. Ballet, jazz, and, you know, I've done it since I was a kid, and will never stop. And I find that it's a tremendous, I mean, it literally involves balance. But
yeah, it does.
It's a great counterpoint to what I do all day long, and it also requires great focus and attention, and you just can't sort of space out while you're learning a piece of choreography. So that's one thing I love. I love also mountain biking and getting out and just charging up a mountain. So those are things that I've always done and will continue to do. And I find also that sort of the mind-body balance is really important. You know, if you're physically fit, your mind is much sharper and you're able to, you know, run a marathon in business as well as physically. So that's one way. And the other is just time for family and friends. I always make time for family and friends because not enough, you know, ever. But, you know, you have to kind of stand back every so often and think about what's really important in life. And those connections and relationships are really more important than anything. So I try and not always succeed as well as I'd like, but I try as much as possible to keep that at the forefront too.
Kim, I want to thank you for what you shared so far. It's easy to see by the discussion here why you were chosen as one of the heroes, that's for sure. Now, you've already achieved a great deal, and I know you're going to take Spike Source to another level. In addition to Spike Source, what is your next thing? What are you going to do next?
Well, one thing I've always done is actually not plan too far in advance.
That's a good idea.
And the reason is, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, I find that serendipity is a wonderful thing, and I am in the most dynamic, exciting industry and, I think, place, the Bay Area, in the world. And I am surrounded by brilliant, creative people, and that network is ever-expanding. So I know that whatever I do next, it will involve creating something new together with a team of people and, you know, doing our best to make an impact in some positive way in the world. And I personally would like to find a way to make an impact in the world that goes beyond my industry. And I haven't quite figured out when and how and what that will be, but that's something that I'd like to do in my life. And I'm sure that the path will appear, as it always has. And as long as I follow my passion and surround myself with people that I love working with and respect and appreciate, I know that life will unfold in wonderful ways. I have faith.
Well, I think that's just really well said. I'm just sitting here thinking you're just one of the top web entrepreneurs of our age. That's wonderful. Wow. We're so thrilled to have talked to you.
Thank you.
I guess some words.
And an honor. honored to be part of this series. Thank you.
A couple of words that stick out in my mind, too, in addition to HERO, is democratize, open source, and serendipity.
It's great. And see, and I'm a techie, so what stands out for me, open source, Java. So, Kim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your joining us. I want to remind listeners where these podcasts can be found at www.ncwit.org and also at w3w3.com. Please do pass these along to friends who might want to listen. Kim, thanks again.
Thank you. My pleasure.